This is The Root Cellar on Pioneer 90.1, where regional history and family folklore come together with your hosts, Jim and Jan Stranley.
Hello again out there in Radio Land. Welcome to The Root Cellar. Root Cellar is a program of Minnesota history and local history combined. The topic for this segment of The Root Cellar is the Jeffers Petroglyphs. This is sort of an unknown topic for most of us, but it has contributed to Minnesota history in one way or another. The topic was nominated as one of the 150 people, places, and things that shaped our state for the sesquicentennial exhibit at the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul. The exhibit is still available for viewing. Check it out if you have the chance. Now, let's begin. Jeffers Petroglyphs is where Minnesota's recorded history begins, according to nominator Tom Sanders, manager for the Minnesota Historical Society's site at Jeffers. There were more than 2,000 petroglyphs or rock carvings made between 5,000 and 250 years ago. On a 150 by 1,000 foot expanse of quartzite in the southwestern part of the state. The carvings, according to Sanders, quote, represent the prayers of people seeking spiritual guidance and record their parables and historic events. They document the perseverance of the people, including the Cheyenne, Dakota, Arapaho, Oto, and Iowa, who thrived on this prairie for thousands of years because of their deep understanding and intimate relationship with their physical and spiritual world, unquote. Some of the symbols carved at Jeffers depict weapons such as the atlatl, a handheld tool that was used by hunters to propel a spear. I had the opportunity once to try and throw the spear using this type of weapon, and it would take a lot of practice. There were images of spear tips used by hunters, as well as a range of symbols from thunderbirds to dragonflies, turtles to buffalo. Why were the carvings made? No one is completely certain, but it is likely that they were used to record events and to accompany prayers and ceremonies. Many Native people still come to visit and pray at the site. There are several books and articles written about the area. Some of these are located in our college library and others in the public library. In 1966, the Minnesota Historical Society purchased the property from W.H. Jeffers to preserve the petroglyphs for future generations. As I contemplate this episode of The Root Cellar, I try to visualize some questions the radio audience might have concerning this historical site. Here are some questions and my attempt to answer them. Why did the ancient people select these rocks for their drawings? Well, according to archaeologist Robert Klaus, buried for millennia, the stone preserves evidences of ancient watercourses in the rippled surfaces of sand that were slowly solidified by heat and pressure. Gradually thrust to the surface and rough polished by glacial ice, a canvas was created that became a medium for the signs and symbols on ancient American Indians. In other words, it became the perfect place to do their artwork. My theory on this is not only the perfect place, but a place that could be preserved forever. The native groups probably made other signs and symbols throughout the plains area, but some were destroyed or disappeared with time. What is the difference between pictographs and petroglyphs? Drawings by earlier inhabitants in caves, rock shelters, or other surfaces protected from the weather and using wet pigments were called pictographs. Petroglyphs were created on rock surfaces by a pecking method or hammering to create the image. This was the method used at the Jeffers site. How do you view the ancient carvings and still preserve these objects? A rope trail takes visitors across the rock face. This path allows visitors to view the carvings while not walking on them. The trail from the visitor center to the end of the rock face is about 0.4 miles. The trail continues another 0.8 miles through the prairie and returns to the visitor center. Now, there are other trails near the visitor center marked by signs that guide visitors through short and tall grasses, blossoming flowers, and rare plants. There is even some prickly pear cactus located there. As mentioned, Native Americans visit and pray at this sacred place. It is one of the oldest continually used sacred sites in the world. I have not had the opportunity to visit the site, but have been told that there is a peacefulness and sense of power present at this place. It provides a rare and profound experience for non-Indians seeking to understand Native American culture and history. Now here is Jan with some local culture and history.
Hi. Well, my story today isn't exactly local. It's more throughout the state of Minnesota because it's taken from the Encyclopedia of Minnesota. Have you ever seen that book? And I'm turning to page 34, which is in the prehistory section, and it's talking about ancient relics, which fits in well with the Jeffers petroglyphs that were done so many years ago. And here I go. A great majority of Minnesota's archaeological relics have come from the thousands of Indian mounds and habitation sites that dot our state of Minnesota. Although the mounds are more obvious than the village sites, the latter are particularly rich in relics. On many of them, successive generations lived and worked, dropping broken tools and dishes, discarding bones of the animals that supplied their food, chipping the implements they used for the hunt, and sewing the skins they used for clothes. Some of these villages were on open ground. Others were in rock shelters or caves. One cave site on the St. Croix River has been thoroughly explored and its relics identified. Here, successive families lived in one place so long that debris accumulated around the doorstep to a depth of 4 feet. The first inhabitants chose the site perhaps as much as 1,000 years ago. They chipped arrows, scraped skins, built fires, and prepared food. Along with their discarded fish hooks were found the bones of the fish they caught, sheephead, pike, catfish, and the like. That their hunters were skillful is attested by the many bones of deer, bear, and smaller animals. Dogs and turtles seem to have added variety to their diet. And I think some of those kinds of things are typical for our area as well. We don't have too many mounds in this area, but I know that we have visited the one up near International Falls, which is quite evident on our flat land. But you'll be surprised to find out how many there are, and it tells about it later. Hunting and household implements are of varied design and material. Many of the excavated tools are of bone, but a few have been found on the shores of Old Lake Agassiz, which point to probable prehistoric use of ivory. And of course, we know that that is our area they're talking about, near the Old Lake Agassiz. Ivory, beads, pipes, and even imitations of animal teeth had apparently been carved from tusks, but whether from fossil or living ivory is undetermined. Isn't that interesting? Pottery vessels have been uncovered in many places, and we know right along our own river, right here in Thief River, they found a site. Prehistoric pottery from the state is of two distinct types. Those from the northern areas are usually of fire clay, with elaborate impressed decorations, and with a capacity as great as 3 to 5 gallons. The clay, mixed with sand or grit temper, was molded into a fragile vessel often less than 1/8 inch thick. Among those displaying the best craftsmanship are the Black Duck vessels, named for the vicinity of their discovery in Beltrami County, and that's not too far away. To the south of the Twin Cities, crushed shell was mixed with clay, and the pots were decorated in a very different style. Despite their differences, both types are believed to have been made by Siouan tribes. Charred bits of broken vessels indicate that although extremely fragile, these vessels were actually used for cooking. Suggestive of the ingenuity of these early races are the numerous hammered copper implements. Spearheads and knives, even beads, have been frequently found. Although it seems likely that the natives used copper nuggets scattered in the glacial drift, legend and some evidence bear out the opinion that prehistoric races actually mined this workable metal in the region of Lake Superior. You know, those people were so hardy and ingenious in figuring out how to make it. You know, you talk about living off the land. Many of these relics are found along portages traversed for an undetermined number of generations or even centuries before the white man came. Well-worn prairie and woodland trails were noted by the very first explorers, who also saw maple trees gashed for drawing sugar sap and often used for landmarks, the ancient pictographs they found on the rocks. And Jim explained how that is actually called petroglyphs if it's carved into rock. The Indian mounds, as exciting as these scattered and isolated discoveries may be, it is the 10,000 or more Indian mounds that have interested the population at large in Minnesota's prehistory. Two early Minnesotans, Alfred J. Hill and Theodore Lewis, located almost 8,000 mounds before 1895. Can you imagine that? Many other mounds have since been charted. Although usually knob-like and symmetrical, in localized areas a few mounds have been found whose pattern is so different as to have attracted keen attention. These are often shaped to resemble birds, and less frequently, turtles, fish, or other animals. In some of them, human remains have been found at the presumed position of the effigy's heart or head. This type of mound is present chiefly in a restricted area in southeastern Minnesota and is much less common than in Wisconsin. Although the explanation of these effigies has not been established, it is believed that they have a religious or tribal significance. Typical burial mounds are scattered throughout the state, although weathering, farming, road building, and relic hunting have reduced their number. Many seem to be empty, but may have contained decomposed human remains. A sufficient number containing preserved skeletal remains makes it clear that their primary use was for burial. Although there is some indication that they were still in use when the first explorers arrived, it is thought that most were built in the centuries immediately preceding the coming of the white man, and how the white man changed their life. We know that story so well. And that's all the further I'm going to go today, but another time I'll be using this book. It's really an interesting one. I know the college has a copy of this, and also probably the public library. It's all about Minnesota. Bye for now. We're headed for the state fair. Next time we'll talk about our adventures there. And that's all for today.